Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. It is Friday. I hope everybody has some plans for this weekend. Not like there's not much going on this time of year. I want to tell you that this show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org, as well as 1798Part2.org, as well as RepublicReview.org. You are listening to the only show that will provide you with the only path in getting the federal government into compliance. It is not something that they can do on their own. As you will learn through this show, it really requires the states. It requires you to make the states get them to do their job in getting the federal government to get back within the framework of the Constitution. So the number to call in today is 215-867-8255. So one of the things I want to do today is I want to make sure I finish up on this very important discussion regarding the 17th Amendment. And that's because there is a lot of information, but I'm trying to give you enough of the background regarding the 17th Amendment and why having representation for the states or the sub-element of government is critical. And so before I do that, let me just kind of point out that we do have, you know, a crowdfunding set up, a campaign set up on GoFundMe.com. And so if you want to contribute to help us get this message out as we travel, because last time it was three of us that went out, a videographer, myself, and a PR person that's supporting us. If you want to help us get this message out, and eventually we're going to get to a point where we're going to need to send more than just one person to speaking in different directions, this is going to grow. And so we do need your help. And if you could contribute, I understand that we're competing with probably a lot of conflicting demands on everybody's finances at this time of year. But I do understand that some people might be able to have a little bandwidth. But if even if you don't have bandwidth and you can't contribute to a campaign at this point, what you can do is you can send us an email, info@reclaimingtherepublic.org, and you can get on board by just literally saying, hey, what can I do with some of my excess time? I mean, I know lots of people don't have excess time, but most people can find a little bit of time, you know, 10, 15, 30 minutes a day, whatever, whether that be early in the morning, afternoon, lunchtime, evening. Everybody has a little bit of time. And I will tell you that if you can contribute, it would be very, very helpful and would be very appreciated. So the email is info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. Another way you can help, and obviously, I haven't said this in a while, one of the ways you can help is getting the word out, telling people to, you know, tune into this show. The content on the show obviously isn't going to be talking about the grapefruit of the day, what's going on, what's really important, like, you know, the new potential attorney general and or, you know, what's going on with the Mueller case or what the heck happened with Comey and, you know, in Congress today. Why wasn't he answering questions? Those right there, if we focused on that all the time, we would not get anything done in really getting organized and fighting. We have to kind of ignore that big calamity going on in D.C. As I like to refer to it, it's like literally, you know, 360 trains coming in every different direction from a, you know, a 360 degree map or like a compass. All these trains are bearing in at full speed and not one can stop and they're all hitting the train station at the same time. It is going to be a mess. There's going to be a lot of mayhem. Well, there's nothing we can do about that. That's going to happen. We don't have to watch it. We don't have to allow it to distract us. I don't know, and I've related this to many people before. I mean, if you go to work and you're trying to put in an honest day's work and you consider yourself a good employee and, you know, a valued employee, how valued are you if you're spending most of your time doing non-productive work, cooler talk, talking over the cubes, or getting engaged in things that aren't productive, that aren't helping your employer do and get things done that he needs done so that he can make money and maintain a profit line to keep people employed? A lot of people just believe they're entitled. And I would hate to think that anybody that, you know, listens to this really believes that they're entitled to a job. We have to earn that job. It's like applying every day when you go to work. If you take that attitude that you're applying every day, that, you know, the next day you could be told, oh, you're gone. We need somebody that's going to work really hard. And so you kind of have to always keep that perspective. And in doing that, you actually get work done. If you're focused on getting work done, you'll actually get work done. So as you listen to this show, and if you want to help again, and you want to be able to get involved, if you can just ignore all of these other distractions, don't ignore the family. I mean, obviously those things are important, but I'm talking about the news, the drip that is literally coming across the media line and just bleeding us with information. They're taking and they're stealing our time. And as they do this, they are effectively robbing us of our future. Because if we don't start acting, we're losing time. If we don't start acting and start working together, we actually have to start uniting. And in doing that, we will actually overcome the insurmountable odds. We will actually be able to do something that no other society has ever done in facing this exact same peril. We were actually able, and we are capable of undoing this. And it is literally, I will tell you, this is not something that we will be doing on our own. This is literally a gift from God. The divine hand of providence gave us the mechanisms that at this point in time, as we get this close to the precipice and falling off of it, we actually have the ability to change our direction and turn around. And it's that good. And almost, you know, it's like good news, right? So I'm offering you hope and good news today as you go into the weekend. And as I actually did look, in the news, and there really isn't any good news. There's no sign that the federal government is going to disband any of its tyrannical roles, responsibilities, or powers that they have taken and or that they have lied and said, yeah, we can do this. We can do whatever we want to do because we have all that power. And I'm telling you, they don't. And I've shown and cited all sorts of documents, founding documents of the ratification debates and so forth, that actually prove otherwise, that they cannot do these things. And so what are you going to do? Are you going to actually keep on believing the lie, or are you going to wake up like that King Rohan in Lord of the Rings and actually break that spell and stand up and assert the authority that you have? That's all the states need to do. We just need to wake them up. And that's what we're trying to do. That's what we're here with Reclaiming the Republic and what I'm doing with Mobius Strip Press and what I need you to do. Again, before I run out of time, I do want to let you know that not next week, but the following week, the week of the 17th, I've got quite a few interviews stacked up that I'm going to give you a lot of good information. One of them is, as I've said before, Mitchell Nicholas Gerber. He will be back. We've got a lot of things to talk about, and we will be talking about the China organ, live organ harvesting. I'll be talking to Aaron Tilbury, and he'll be talking about the Jonah Project and his efforts in trying to stop the sex slave trade, as well as Keith Broders and what he is going to be doing in the 2019 session for this 17th Amendment. And I'm actually going to be talking to Mark Erbach, the former governor candidate for Georgia, who also wrote a book called Believed, Can America Have Another Third Great Awakening or something like that? I forget the subtitle, but it's Believe, and it's a decent book. It's really a good book. I've really enjoyed the book because it takes a completely fresh approach in really focusing on the religious aspects of the education system and how we've been debased and demoralized and what the education system has really done. Another thing I want to remind you of is I know I haven't done my President Bush, and I'll probably just plug this once a week now, but my tribute to the past president will be coming up in January. It's one of those things that I just don't think it's not appropriate to discuss things, ills and mistakes and those types of things, and have an honest analysis during somebody's, wake and so forth. So I will let, and with due respect to those who are mourning, we will kind of let that continue and let the process go, and we will get engaged in an honest dialogue regarding the past President Bush in January. Now, one of the things that I think is really, really important that I don't know if I've said it enough, but I'm going to get into American Republicanism as soon as we get back from this hard break, because it's really important that people understand Republicanism, because too few people understand their form of government. They all know that we're a constitutional republic, but sometimes people don't really know what that means. So when we come back, I'm going to delve into that again. I know I talked about it yesterday, but I'm going to cite some documents for you. So when we come back, I have some ratification debates for you regarding republicanism.
Most people resist change, but how would you like to be rewarded in at least two ways for considering a new dentist? Dr. Tracy believes your smile is a reflection upon him, and that is a mutually shared reward between both him and you. Another reward is improving your overall health by working with your dentist like Dr. Tracy and developing a strategy in maintaining your dental health. But how would you like a direct incentive in considering a new dentist? Dr. Tracy and his staff from time to time offer a special referral program. For every new patient you refer who becomes a patient, Dr. Tracy will reward you with $50 off your dental work. Consequently, if you refer five people, that's $250 off your dental work. Give them a call and ask for the details and the availability of the referral program by calling 466-6614 or go to VonTracyDDS.com. Again, that's 466-6614 or sign up at VonTracyDDS.com.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in, and let's get on with the dialogue.
So, republicanism. Republicanism is a form of government that uses representation. There are different forms of government. Some of them are autocratic forms of government, and typically, democracy is a kind of a mob rule. It's not necessarily autocratic, but it all depends on the type of democracy. There are democracies, as you can look supposedly in Russia, that's a democracy. They all have votes every so many years to elect their supreme leader. but that's not really a democracy. They actually don't have the ability to vote on every single issue. And that's what a democracy does. A democracy literally forces, if there's going to be a tax, the people vote on every little issue. There's nobody other than the people that are sovereigns. And there's no doubt that the framers clearly identified the people were sovereigns, but they actually had the epiphany that there were sovereigns, or there was more than just them as the sovereigns. They were the ultimate sovereigns, but they recognized the fact that there were other sovereigns. And so when you look at a Republican form of government, a Republican form of government is a government that actually provides representation to the sovereigns. So that's why in most Republican forms of government, the representation represented, getting a little tongue-tied today, sorry about that, the representation represented the people. Now, in Britain, it was the House of Lords, those with the elitist and the commons, those that didn't have a lot of money. So they had two separate houses, but both houses represented the people. And in America, it was a little different. And during the Virginia ratification debates, Mr. Grayson, you know, kind of posed this point out here. And so he created this argument. And he says, I suppose, and he was not in favor, by the way, of the ratification of the Constitution. And he says, I suppose the general government as being paramount would prevail. In other words, because of the Constitution and because it's the senior of the governments, or the one that's, you know, the central government, the national government, that it would prevail. How are two legislators to coincide with powers transcendent, supreme, and omnipotent? For such is the definition of a legislature. The reason I'm reading this for you is that particular line right there, because people do not understand who the legislators are. So I'm going to read this again. How are two legislatures to coincide? And he's talking about the state's legislatures as well as the national legislature. With powers transcendent, supreme, and omnipotent. For such is the definition of a legislature. There must be an external interference, not only in the collective of taxes, but in the judiciary. Was there ever such a thing in any country before? Absolutely not. What they were doing was absolutely groundbreaking. Great Britain never went so far in the Stamp Act, and the abhorrence of Irish never went so far. I never heard of two supreme coordinate powers in one and the same country before. I cannot conceive how it can happen. It surpasses everything that I have read of concerning other governments, or that I conceive by the utmost exertion of my faculties. And so the two legislatures, actually, I have to stand myself corrected. The two legislatures he's really talking about is in Congress itself. I the next citation is going to get into the states, but these two legislatures he's actually talking about are the two legislative bodies that are separate bodies of the Senate and Congress, because we have a bicameral legislative body that actually has separate bodies with separate sovereigns and separate interests. And even though Britain may have had a House of Commons and a House of Lords, they were really the same body, and they kind of shared a lot of the same responsibilities. Now, Mr. Wilson, but the most important point that you have to understand is that when we create a legislative body, we have created a sovereign. And under republicanism, this was the huge epiphany that had never occurred before, because we always just considered the people sovereigns. But they clearly understood that the legislators were a level of sovereignty of all those things. In most cases, they were generally applied powers. In other words, they could do anything and everything they wanted to do. So they were literally the ultimate powers until the people revolted. Now, in Pennsylvania, Mr. Wilson went on and said this: when I made the observation that some politicians would say the supreme power was lodged in our state constitutions, I did not suspect that the honorable gentleman from Westmoreland, and he was referring to Mr. Finley, was included in that description. But I find myself disappointed, for I imagine his opposition would arise from another consideration. His position is that the supreme power resides in the states as governments, and mine is that it resides in the people as the fountain of government, that the people have not, that the people meant not, and that the people ought not to part with any government whatsoever. In their hands, it remains secure. They can delegate it in such proportions to such bodies on such terms and under such limitations as they think proper. I agree with the members in opposition. There cannot be two sovereign powers on the same subject. And so this was the beauty of what they did, because this was literally, he's talking about the state powers. And what they did in moving forward, as he talks about the United States, he literally starts talking about the two separate powers from the states as well as the federal government, and the federal government having its own sovereignty. They had sovereignty over what? Over the enumerated powers given them. They were the ones that were to wage war and take care of the national security and the general, and when I say general welfare, the general whole being of the republic, to ensure that it wasn't being attacked by corrosive immigration standards or attacked by malicious products coming in via trade and so forth. They had a responsibility for the general welfare to ensure that they were protected and safe and could thrive. And why is this important? Because in America and during the Constitutional Convention, when Roger Sherman came forth with his proposal of allowing two separate bodies in Congress, one for the people and one for the states, there was a recognition that, yes, now we have representation for the sovereigns that literally exist underneath the federal government. It's more than just the people, because if it was just the people, then the states, they dissolve. I mean, if it was only the people, then everything would be popular votes and so forth. But it's not. We actually have a Republican form of government where each independent state is a sovereign entity. And Madison points this out in the Virginia ratifications as well, when he says, who are the parties to the Constitution? We the people? No, we the people of the several 13 sovereign states is what Madison states. And this is a very important point that I'm trying to get you to understand. You have to get this. You have to understand that in a true American Republican form of government, those who have a body and or a responsibility for a certain matter, in other words, they are the sovereigns, they have the utmost and the final decision and say over issues, whether that be, you know, over, you know, the land issues, whether that be over the traffic issues, or whether that be over the general welfare of the local people in the communities or what have you, that is divided between the people and as well as the county, as well as the states. And so as we start breaking down where that sovereignty is, we have to also recognize that those sovereigns need representation in that next level of government up. And so in the states, that would be the counties as well as the people. And in the national government, that would be the states as well as the people of the states. Because we don't break the counties down at the national level. We only break them down for the state. The states are the breakdown for the national level. That is why we do not marginalize the representation of Wyoming and the Dakotas and Montana and so forth, because if it was really an apportionment about people and it was only we the people, then we would probably try to go down the same democratic path of trying to take away representation from those four states. Those states have separate and disparate interests. The people of those states have separate and disparate interests. It's the same thing with the folks on the East Coast as the West Coast. Every state has their own separate interests. They have their own separate resources. So they have to have representation. And that was the whole point. And that was the huge compromise that Roger Sherman was able to bring forward, because people realized that, one, the people were going to have their representation on a shared, or I should say, an equally apportioned, and the states would have an equally apportioned representation as well. And that was brilliant. That was truly divine revelation. We will be right back after a hard break and after a word from our sponsors. Please stay tuned. Thank you so much.
Most of my listeners understand the importance in having strategic goals, but do you have a long-term strategy for your dental health? Too many people are only focused on whitening their smile. I understand the appearance of your teeth can give you confidence, but this can risk your future health in only addressing the cosmetics of your teeth, and many dentists will take your money just to do this. They say failing to plan is planning to fail, and if you don't have a long-term strategy for your teeth and dental health, then you need a new dentist. Every dentist provides a dental plan, but Dr. Tracy and his staff develops a strategy to help you maintain and restore your dental health to what it needs to be. To develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health, connect with Dr. Von Tracy, DDS.com. That's VonTracyDDS.com. So you too can develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
And so let me just finish what Mr. Wilson was saying, because maybe he says it a little more eloquently, because he says it differently. And he says this. He says, "I consider the people of the United States as forming one great community. And I consider that the people of the different states as forming communities again on a lesser scale. From this great division of the people into distinct communities, it will be found necessary that different proportions of legislative power should be given to the governments according to the nature, number, and magnitude of their objects. Unless the people are considered in these two views, we shall never be able to understand the principle on which this system was constructed. I view the states as made for the people as well as by them, and not the people made for the states. The people, therefore, have a right, whilst enjoying the undeniable powers of society, to, from either a general government or state governments, in what manner they please, or to accommodate them to one another, and by this means preserve them all. This, I say, is the inherent and unalienable right of the people, and as an illustration of it, I beg to read a few words from the Declaration of Independence made by the representatives of the United States and recognized by the whole Union. And so he goes into reading the Declaration of Independence. That exact same principle was also applied when they started realigning the states themselves, and that the counties were a different or a smaller community within the community of the states. And so understanding that legislation and sovereignty is what republicanism is all about, in other words, ensuring representation, because it's not representation for one person. It is one person representing a whole body of people. And in the Constitution, that was 30,000 people. In the states, well, they can't necessarily represent, you know, the same proportion, but it is proportional. But by breaking it down by counties makes it more manageable, and actually those communities can manage themselves even better. So in understanding what Sherman offered in this compromise, he actually provided a greater distribution and actually a better form of government, because the appropriate parties who knew what was best, those who knew what was best for the states, were the states. In other words, having the stakeholders become those who are engaged. So the states were engaged and the people were engaged. And it provided for, I think, the mixture of a perfect government that literally became the greatest republic ever that existed on the face of this earth. Now, as moving forward, again, because I want to recap on this, there have been seven states that have refused to actually ratify or have rejected the ratification of the 17th Amendment. And as I was saying yesterday, because they have not ratified, because they have either rejected or did not accept or give consent to the 17th Amendment, that amendment protection clause in Article 5 protects them and allows them to continue to maintain their equal suffrage within the Senate so that they can continue to appoint their senators instead of throwing their senators out every 6 years for a general election for the people. Because the real problem is that these people are not being represented by the people. The Senate is actually representing the globalists and large corporations and those who have money. So hopefully you'll be getting on board in 2019 in helping by sending emails to these seven states. It'll be Florida, Georgia, Kentucky, Mississippi, South Carolina, Virginia, and Utah. And, you know, you don't have to even reference me. I mean, I'll probably become the most hated person by these state legislatures as you start putting pressure on them. But if you work with the Constitution Club, they will have the scripts ready for you so that if you just go there, log in, and grab the scripts, you can literally, take them into your email and send them out with the email list that they'll provide, because they'll have both an email list for you as well as the script. All you've got to do is just copy, paste, and go. It'll be that easy. But in doing this, we'll actually be able to take away the Senate and we'll literally rip it out of the hands of the globalists, because there's no doubt, if you look at the money being spent, if you look at who's really calling the shots, and the reason why we really want to make sure we do this is because if you understand, and I've talked about this, and I'm hoping to get into the details of this agreement, the USMCA agreement is going to devastate us, because if that actually gets ratified by the Senate, and we have some time, hopefully we can actually start creating waves. to where the Senate really understands that, you know, one, they better not ratify that, and two, that the changes are coming. The changes are literally coming back, and that they will be accountable once again to their states, who they're supposed to represent. And as I said yesterday, the Constitution did not change who their constituents were. Their constituents were still the states. It's just that they changed the method, and by doing so, they changed the loyalty as well as they took away the ability to enforce, or I should say for the states to have any type of assurance that these that their representatives, their senators, were actually going to represent them. Now there's no guarantee, and that's why the Senate is completely broke. That is why the Senate is off meandering and doing all sorts of things they shouldn't be doing. They should be doing the bidding of the states and what is best for this republic, and it has been a travesty ever since the 17th Amendment. So the states, and I started covering this as we were going off the air yesterday, the states that need to flip are Arizona, Kansas, North Carolina, Iowa, Idaho, West Virginia, Texas, Wyoming, Arkansas, Maine, North Dakota, South Dakota, Oklahoma, Ohio, Missouri, Nebraska, Tennessee, Pennsylvania, Montana, and Indiana. All of these are pretty doggone red conservative states. And all of these, probably, if you go and talk to any of the state legislatures in these states, are probably really fed up with the idea that their senators don't even pay them any mind and do not represent them. Well, it's time to change that, and we actually have a vehicle of doing that, because all they have to do is follow the lead of Delaware by literally rescinding their ratification of the 17th Amendment and formally rejecting it by having a rejection vote and sending the results of that rejection vote into the federal government. That way, they can actually rescind the 17th Amendment, because even though it seemed to have been ratified, even though there's no evidence of it being ratified, they've been getting away with it for, two centuries now. It's time to rescind that, because we actually can. When they allow one state to change its mind and change its ultimate decision on the amendment, they have to allow every state to be able to do that as well. And so these are really powerful words. There's lots of people that really are not going to like the words I'm saying. And so I may be, the enemy number one for the globalists and everything else. But why don't you take action? Why don't you get involved and make sure you take advantage of this upcoming 2019 session by working with the Constitution Club so that you can get those scripts, send these things out, and get these states to get their representation back. This would actually, if you add the 7 with this 20, this would give us 27 states that would actually swing the door, changing the outcome of the 17th Amendment and literally putting a gap in the constitutional amendments, because it'll go 1 to 16, nothing, and then 18 to 27, because they're not going to change the numbers of those amendments, because those numbers are etched in stone. So there'll always be a gap, and we can remember that gap as the gap that was caused by the progressive era. And so, what do you think about that? Are you ready? Are you motivated? Do you want to have an impact on government without really having to do much, having to spend hardly any money? This is probably the biggest bang for your buck you will ever see or do in your lifetime, because literally this is a very small effort. It may be a big effort on your state legislator side, but it is literally a small effort on your side. Now, I know I see I'm coming into a hard break. So what I want to talk about next is I want to talk about the caravan and the fact that we had such outsider influence in getting this thing organized and moving these people up to our border to get them to permeate and penetrate our system here. And so when we come back, we're going to talk about this because I believe this is an act of war, and I'll get your thoughts of this. So when we come back, we will have some thoughts on that. And so please stay tuned. I'll be right back after this break.
It's that time of year to get that dental checkup and cleaning. I know many of us are creatures of habit, and we tend to settle for what we know, and many of us are procrastinators. I was that way myself with my past dentist, jumping from one dentist chair to the next. From all the hopping, I've learned that all dentists are not equal, and I would challenge you to consider checking out Dr. Von Tracy. I work hard to make a living, and I'm not one to throw my hard-earned money away on just a good dentist. That's why it took me a couple of years to find a great dentist. From the excellence of his staff to the quality of the work, Dr. Tracy is the difference. I know it's time to put standards to our loyalty, so I would ask you to give Dr. Tracy a try by setting up your next appointment with him. Just go to VONTRACYDDS.com or call them at 509-466-6614. Again, sign up at VONTRACYDDS.com. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
All right, so it's time to have a little bit of an honest conversation. And so when we think about people coming here, it's, you know, there's lots of people that want to come here. There's no doubt about it. If you went to any of these third world nations, and, you know, you said, where would you love to go? A lot of them would probably say, go to America. There's not too many of them that says, I want to go to Venezuela, or I would want to go to Cuba, or Russia, or China, especially China. It's probably one of, and North Korea. I mean, you know, the more despotic the empire or the government, then probably the less likelihood of people in impoverished nations would want to literally go there and be a part of that society. So there's a lot of people that want to come here. I get that. But it's a little bit different when all of a sudden somebody marshals together a large body of people to literally attack and invade a country, whether that's with 500, whether that's with 1,000, whether that's with 15,000, or over the course of several years, whether that is, you know, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands. If you read the Constitution, Article 4, Section 4, the Guarantee Clause, the United States shall guarantee to every state in this union a republican form of government and shall protect them from invasion or against invasion. So what does that mean, invasion? So let's put this into context. If there are people that are all on their own accord, spontaneously packing up and deciding to come here, then okay, that is just a big coincidence. We have lots of people, you know, just, you know, happening to, you know, be hitting the road at the same time and coming here because they want asylum. They want to, they're willing to break our laws to live in our society. But it's a lot different when all of a sudden you find out that there have been people that have been working, lying, and convincing people to join. And as a matter of fact, that information came out just recently. And now we have found that elitists have used and lied to these good people to join this caravan. And as far as I'm concerned, whoever these folks are, they are posing an act of war against our republic by literally orchestrating an invasion, regardless of whether this invasion is an invasion with armed forces or whether this is an invasion to overcome our, if you want to call it, our electorate, as well as to help collapse our entitlement state and to try to come here and demand entitlements from us. Those people who are working to undermine our immigration system as well as undermine our system in entirety, then I believe those people should be arrested and tried. And we already know that George Soros was public in saying that he was going to give them so much money in credit cards when they got here. Why is it that we are not enforcing our laws? This is something that Trump could easily do if he had the cojones, as well as he had a Department of Justice with the cojones to literally pull these folks in and, you know, do the investigation, do the due diligence, and have the indictments ready, indict them, and try them. Because there's no doubt in my mind, these people are bad players that are trying to undermine our government and our tranquility here in, if you, whatever tranquility you want to call it, with the ideological warfare that we've got between the progressives as well as the constitutionalists and so forth. I mean, it is getting crazy, but nevertheless, that is our craziness that we should be allowed to tend to instead of having them inject more craziness. And that is literally a violation of the laws of nations. There's no doubt in my mind. We need to go after these people and try them. Everybody wants to arrest Soros. Here is your, I believe here is your fruit, or here is the one thing that you can actually go after him for, because there's no doubt he has been spending money, and the open border society is literally the front for these types of efforts. And Bill Gates is a part of this. So all of those people that were contributing money to actually do this, they should be eligible for having to face a trial in America for literally trying to undermine our system. I would just love to see these folks, all of these elitists, do a perp walk. Wouldn't that be great? One of the things you'll find in the news just recently, and I want to put this into perspective, that they're talking about, because now that we're wrapping up the year in 2018, they're saying that, well, the number one killer in the world is traffic accidents. And according to the progressive news agencies, traffic deaths has accounted for 1.3 million lives this year throughout the world. And that's a lot of people that have died in traffic deaths. I'm not sure how many, because I do know that there's far more people that die from in America from drunk drivers than, you know, by guns or anything else. And it's not like we see anybody honestly trying to, you know, take alcohol out of everybody's home so that we have less drunks on the road. But they do want to take your guns. Another thing that I want to put this into context with is, do you understand the contrast of how many people die a year with traffic accidents in contrast to abortions? So in the world, it was 1.3 million lives a year. And they're saying worldwide, for abortions, because the abortioncounter.com will actually show you that it was 38 million babies that were aborted in the year of 2018. And that is really hard to fathom. Over 1.5 billion babies have been aborted since 1980. That's even harder to fathom. I don't know why they like to skew these numbers or why they like to put these types of things out, but I just want to put it into context because they're trying to get you to think, well, this is a bad thing, that these people are dead. Yeah, 1.3 million people are dead, but aren't babies people? That is how we have marginalized life. And that is how, by them controlling the narrative, they've been able to redefine life. They've been able to redefine gender. They're redefining marriage. They're just redefining everything they can. And they're trying to put things into perspective. And one of the reasons why this number is important and why it's popping up this year is as we start moving closer to a society with driverless cars, they're going to try to tell you that life will be safer in a driverless car. In other words, you don't drive, the car just takes you there. Are you ready for that? Because that's what they're trying to do. And it's almost like Minority Report, right? We're almost there, aren't we? Anyway, another thing that I think is really, really important for you to understand is CVS, who is probably the largest pharmacy in providing medication for people in America. And what I mean by that is because there's a lot of people that use Express Scripts. If you're a vet, they have Express Scripts because they mail you your prescriptions. Well, actually, Express Scripts may be maybe a front end for the government in doing that. But the people that actually do that for Express Scripts is CVS. CVS provides more pharmaceutical supplies to the American public than any other company. And Aetna and CVS look to be going down the marriage aisle very soon, and it looks like this is going to get CVS even closer to a monopoly. Now, we do have these other outliers like what Walgreens, Rite Aid, and actually Rite Aid just got bought out by, I believe, Albertsons or Save-On. So you're seeing that the delivery system of pharmaceuticals, because we know Big Pharma is a huge, huge pot of money. There's so much money there. And as they start bringing in all these different outliers and taking control of them, well, what happens is now they can start fixing prices so that they can maximize their profits as you buy them. And as because the insurance companies, which is CVS is the insurance company. Now they're guaranteeing themselves into their one set profit line. I will just let you know that these things are not good deals. We want to try to maintain. And the problem is, you understand that the reason why CVS and Aetna and the fact that they're able to do, the deals that they're making is because government assists them. When government assists the setup of a monopoly, I'm telling you, the people are getting screwed over big time. Another thing, so the two things you can look forward to probably in 2019, if you notice what's going on with Russia and the Ukraine, there's going to be problems that are going to persist, as well as the way China has been asserting itself more and more in Tibet, Vietnam, as well as Taiwan. We might be looking at some real conventional warfare coming up, and I guess we're just the people that might answer up to that. That's a dialogue for another show. I'm G.R. Mobley. I'm Reclaiming the Republic, and I need your help, and I hope you have a great weekend. God bless.
Are you a patriotic proprietor of a business that is looking to get exposure on a fast-growing program? How would you like to get exposure on the only program on the air that provides an actual constitutional solution to all the federal government overreach and encroachments? If you understand the importance of educating the electorate, we would love to work with you in growing your business and revenues while you support the airing of our content on this station. Your support goes to growing the reach of this show and does not pay for elaborate salaries or highfalutin lifestyles. This show is growing fast, and we're also planning on airing the content about Republic Review on a video medium soon. If you'd like to be a part of history and the growth of the most relevant and result-oriented show on the air anywhere in the world, then just email me at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can lock in exceptional pricing and great advertising opportunities.